Welcome to Busy Research, the podcast where business meets data and insights drive success. I'm your host, Vicki McCarthy, director of the Center for Applied Business Research at Austin Peay State University. On this podcast, we get busy learning about how applied business research can improve business decision making. On today's episode of Busy Research, we delve into the world of financial markets and investment strategies. To learn more about these topics, I turn to an expert in the field, Jason Shapiro, host of Crowded Market Report. Jason manages large sums of money ranging from a few million to several hundred million dollars. He's an expert in future markets from equities, currencies, and fixed income to currencies and precious metals. With over 30 years of trading experience, Jason's success has been written about by author Jack Schrager in his latest Market Wizards book. Welcome, Jason. To kick things off, could you share more about your background and investment research experience?
Yeah, I mean, I started in the financial markets when I was about 22 or 23, so it's been a good 35 years or so. And I've kind of gone through the whole gamut of fundamental research, technical research, all that type of stuff, and have sort of settled on what I do now, which is really more behavioral type of stuff.
So I've done some reading about your background and your investment strategy, and you mentioned behavioral approaches. Is that what a contrarian approach to investing is, looking at behavior in the markets?
It doesn't have to be.
Okay.
But the way that I try to approach it is it's from a behavioral type of point of view, yes.
Okay. Can you elaborate a little bit more on that strategy?
Yeah. So there's something that people know as crowding, you know, be it in financial markets or being anywhere else. And I believe that when people stop thinking and just start acting, because that's the way that everybody else is acting, that there is some there's something there that's not right, you know. And you can see it throughout history in anything, but I just use it for the financial market. So I try to measure when people are doing that. They've sort of thrown logic out and they're just following the crowd. And I think that offers a way for me to go the other way and take advantage of that.
Okay, so you're delving into the actual data and not just how the crowds are growing or migrating towards one investment or another. Can you talk a little bit about, if you're not watching the crowd and what they're doing, what data are you actually looking at to make your critical decisions?
Well, it is data that's trying to measure the crowd. So some of it is hard data.
Okay.
In the futures markets, they have a data set that's known as the commitment of traders data, which shows where futures traders are positioned. So I'm looking at that. And then there's more sort of, I guess you would call it discretionary data, qualitative data, where I'm sort of just paying attention to what a lot of people are either talking about their views in the market or writing about, or what a lot of the research people are saying. And I'm looking for very high consensus ideas as a way to sort of go the other way.
So do you research actual companies when you're looking at?
I do not.
You do not. Okay.
I research what other people are researching.
you research what? Okay. Okay.
In other words, I don't really believe that I or anyone has the ability over time to come up with what the future prospects are for Apple's computer, you know, Apple stock, better than what the entire world is coming up with. You know, how am I going to come up with a better analysis than everybody else combined? And what everybody else combined has come up with is what's in the price of a particular stock. So I'm not going to sit here and go through balance sheets and try and do this better than other people. And it's not just other people, it's everybody combined. I think that's impossible. So being that the market is a discounting mechanism, it's discounting in what everybody else is doing. And so I'm really looking for where there's mass consensus and what everybody else is doing. And I think that then I can try and go the other way of what they are all doing. And really, all it gives me is an edge on a risk-reward basis. You know, if everybody ends up being correct, then there's a very little upside to that because it's all discounted in. Whereas if everybody ends up being wrong, then there can be a huge move the other way. So I'm trying to get into positions where I can make a lot and lose a little on an idea.
Yeah, and I noticed in one of your crowded market reports, you use the analogy of an NFL football game, where you were talking about the worst team and the best team. And I thought that was very interesting because it kind of, I don't know really much about the financial markets. And I think a lot of business owners don't and individuals. So I thought I like that analogy. And when you were talking about that, the point spread instead of the final outcome. Can you kind of use that analogy here, maybe to for my listeners, because I think that my listeners are going to be very different than yours.
Well, I think it's valid for just about anything that has to do with business or uncertainty or anything. Like, if you are a dentist, let's say, and you open up a dental practice somewhere where there's no other dental practices within 50 miles, right? Then you're probably going to have a good business, right? But then somebody else opens up a dentist shop next door. And another person does, and another person does, and slowly those extra profits that you're making are going to get arbitraged out, clearly, right? And that's what sort of free market business is all about. Because if you're making extra profits, people will smell it out and they will move in and you'll have to try and differentiate yourself as, oh, I'm a better dentist than the other person, you know what I mean? But at the end of the day, you know, slowly those extra profits are going to get arbitraged out over time. And we see that throughout the history of business, right? So it's just like that. You know, with the NFL thing, it's like it's more of a example of the financial markets where people think that, like, oh, this company, Apple Computer, I don't even know if it's called Apple Computer anymore, just Apple, is a great company. Okay, great. But that's not really the question, right? The question is what's discounted into the price of the stock, right? And with the NFL, it's like, okay, here's the best team in the NFL playing the worst team in the NFL. It's easy to say the best team's going to win, but that's not the question if you're trying to make money off of it. You know, the question is, are they going to win by more than the point spread? And the point spread discounts in the fact that they are that much better than the worst team, right? So that's really the question. Not are they going to win, is are they going to beat the point spread? Are they going to beat that discounting mechanism? So that's kind of what I relate the NFL football betting to the markets is all about.
Do you see that point spread as a data point where once you that makes a determination for you?
Well, again, how are you going to come up with a better point spread than the whole world is coming up with, right? And it's the same thing that people do in the markets. There's the fundamental aspect of it, right? You can look at the teams and you could look how they match up and you can see how the quarterback is playing and how the offensive line matches up against the defensive line. You know, you can do that sort of fundamental analysis. Are you going to do that better than the millions of people that are betting on the football game? My argument is no. Just like my argument of trying to figure out how Apple Computer is going to do, how Apple's going to do in the future better than everybody else is also very difficult. Then people use, you know, like technical analysis in the stock market, and they also use it in like the football betting. So here's a game being played on a Thursday night, and the home team on Thursday night playing on grass, who lost last Sunday, has an 80% chance of beating the spread. You know, they do this technical analysis stuff. And it's so available nowadays to be able to do that stuff that, again, I think that's also already discounted into the point spread. So how are you going to beat that point spread? And what we find us, obviously, most people don't. You know, a large percentage of people that bet football lose because trying to beat that stuff is very, very difficult to do over time. And any individual bet, it's probably a 50-50 chance. But over time, truthfully, most people lose trying to do that. So how do you determine if the point spread is too high or too low? And the way that I look at it, just like I look at it in the markets, is it's a question of participation. If 95% of the people are betting on one side of that, because the point spread moves just like the price of a stock moves as more people get on one side, it shifts. So if 95% of the people, let's say, are betting on one team, that point spread's going to move. And I think because 95% of the people have bet on that, the point spreads will probably move too much. So the risk-reward trade is to go the other way and bet the other side. And same thing in the markets. If 95% of the people believe that this stock is going up, then it's and are positioned money-wise to believe that, then I think that the risk-reward is to go the other way.
So how do you, so that's the discretionary data that you're talking about, the qualitative data. Then how do you use the hard data in conjunction with that to determine your next move?
Well, it kind of just becomes a combination. Here's the hard data that shows me that way too many people are long or short a certain asset, right? Mm-hmm. So that kind of is the first step, okay? The hard data shows me that they're either too long or too short something, so I'm looking to go the other way. Then I try to confirm that by listening to people and reading and trying to figure out why everybody is going that way, right? And then I'm watching for market reactions to that type of stuff. So if everybody's telling me, you know, Apple is the greatest stock to buy in the world, and I'm hearing that everywhere, and I'm seeing hard data that's showing me that compared to history, there are way too many people long this stock. And the reason is, well, because people think that the earnings are going to come out next quarter and they're going to be 20% above expectations. Okay. So now the earnings come out. And in fact, it's not 20% above expectations, it's 40% above expectations. And then the stock doesn't go up, even though that happened. That to me is the tell, right? And the reason is to me, because everybody's already long the thing. If everybody's already long, how can it possibly go up? Now, there's always someone that can, obviously, there's always money out there that can get more long. Mm-hmm. But on a relative basis, you know, everybody's already in. You know, you take it to an extreme. If everybody in the world had every single dollar bet on one stock, then it could never go up because there's no more money to go in, right? Now, clearly that can never happen. But on a relative basis, that's what I'm looking for. And then I'm looking for the tell of the market to tell me that that is in fact the case. And that's when I actually put on a trade.
And it sounds like that's a lot of data out there between the hard data and watching people and the markets and all of that. Do you use any type of AI to help you analyze these trends and what's going on? Or is this just you sorting through all of the data on your own?
I don't really know what AI is, to tell you the truth. Uh-huh.
Okay.
Like, if AI means, do I use a computer? Then yes, I use a computer, you know? Okay. I think that's what AI is, until sort of the last year when AI became this other thing. But no, I have the hard data. It's easy, you know, just a spreadsheet. And then from there, I'm listening, you know, I search the internet. Hey, why does everybody want to be long Apple, right? And I'll get a bunch of reports and I'll read it. And, you know, this is the way I've always done it. I think I'm too old to make it any more efficient than that. People probably could do it. And I know people do. They search the internet for like how many people have mentioned Apple computer or Apple stock today. And, you know, they look for that kind of stuff. And those people are a lot smarter than I am, arguably. So I just kind of do it semi old school. You know, there's a little bit of, it's just like anything, you know, there's a little bit of science and there's a little bit of feel, you know, and feel is just a function, I think, of experience, you know. They say what intuition is just a function of time, right? Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a combination of those two things. I won't let my intuition let me do anything unless the data backs it up. But so I get the data first. And then my intuition starts to kick in as to when to do something.
Can you give me an example of a time where the data wasn't necessarily backing it up, but your intuition was like, this doesn't make sense. And then, you know, it kind of played out where your intuition was right, even though.
Not really. It goes the other way. Like the data will back it up.
Okay.
I won't do anything unless the data backs it up. But the data might back it up and I still might not do anything because my intuition might tell me that this isn't the time. So that happens occasionally. recently we've seen that where I've been getting some data that says that the stock market is a short here. And I haven't done it because my intuition is telling me that the time just isn't right yet. So I'm kind of waiting till my intuition sort of tells me a little bit more about that. So that happens quite a bit, you know.
And have you found you've been right on that most of the time?
I wouldn't say most of the time.
No.
But I would say over time. I can track the returns of a portfolio that trades just off of the data, which I do track. And I compare that to my actual returns, which will only take trades that that systematic portfolio will take, but it will sometimes not take the trades that that portfolio will take. And I have, to this point, beaten the 100% systematic thing over time. So that's, although if I didn't, then I wouldn't do it. I would just do the systematic thing. You know, I'm not here to prove anything. I'm just here to make the most efficient returns that I can make. It's harder. It would be a hell of a lot easier if I could just do it 100% systematically. I wouldn't even have to think. But doesn't that make sense? You know, it's harder, therefore it ends up being better, right? I mean, isn't that how life should work?
Well, it sounds, you know, when looking at investing, it's the wealth creation that you're interested in, right? And so if you had advice for entrepreneurs or small business owners that are looking to invest for the purposes of creating wealth, maybe 2 or 3 points that you would give them?
If they're looking to invest in the public markets, the stock markets and all that?
Yes.
You know something? I'm a trader, right? Mm-hmm. I buy short, I go long, I go short, not just the stock market, but fixed income, currencies, commodities, right? And I've been doing this for a good 35 years. I think that the lesson that I have learned is exactly what everybody has always told you, right? Which I doubted my whole life. And I paid the price because of it, which is focus on your business. And then if you have savings, just put it in the stock market for the long term. You know, dollar cost average for the long term. That has what has worked, right? And I doubted it my whole life. And the truth is I would have a lot more money if I hadn't doubted that, you know. My particular business and my particular return stream that I develop in my trading adds value to a group of institutional investors that I service, okay? Because it has negative correlation to some of their other return streams. So if you, this gets a little bit deep into the weeds, but if you put together a bunch of return streams that have non-correlation and positive return expectations, then over time you will have better risk-adjusted returns over time. So I'm one piece of that. You know, I don't put all of my money into my trading. I don't have clients that put all of their money into my trading, right? My clients are like a group of fund of funds that gather money and dish it out to, you know, 8 or 12 different kind of hedge funds, right? And my returns have negative correlation to those other hedge funds. So when they put that together, it pushes out the efficient frontier and gives them a better risk-adjusted return over time. That's what my business is. But for people who are not doing this and that have, you know, a business, whatever their business is, it has been proven over time that investing for the long term in the stock market by dollar cost averaging has been very beneficial. And am I here to say, oh, well, the market right now is overvalued and blah, blah, blah. Maybe, but maybe not. You know what I mean? There's no real way to know that, right? And what I do know is that anytime you've thought that, it has cost you because the market is sitting basically on all-time highs right now, right, as we sit. Despite the fact that there was a crash in 08 and all that. I mean, I know people who made money short the stock market in 08, and that's terrific. But the truth is they've lost that whole back because they probably stayed short almost the whole way back up, right? The people who made more money were the people who were dollar cost averaging into that crash. And they, because they bought down there very low, and now the market's come back. And that over time has been the best strategy. And it's boring, and it's what a lot of people will tell you to do. But the truth is that has proven to be correct. And you're betting on, well, what I like to think is you're betting on three things when it comes to this, the long term of the stock market. You're betting on population growth, which isn't going anywhere, which means if you're selling, they always say razor blades, and the population, there's more people to buy the razor blades, well, then your revenues are probably going to go up, right? Maybe not yours, because maybe some other company does a better job of selling them razor blades, but overall, there's going to be more razor blades sold, right? So these companies are going to make more money. You're betting on some inflation, right? There's always some inflation. So if inflation is up 3%, well, then that's 3% more revenues right there, right? And you're betting on really the capitalist system, which entices people to squeeze more profits out of a dollar, which is what the capitalist system allows you to do and entices you to do. So you're betting on those three things: the population growth, some inflation, and humans' ability to be more productive, right? Productivity. And throughout, you can bet against that all you want, okay? But it doesn't work. You know, you're not losing population growth. You're not losing some inflation. And you're not losing, as long as people are incentivized to make more money, you're not losing productivity. I mean, just think about the productivity that's got on in the last 140 years, right? I mean, electricity came, right? Productivity went through the, you can go through them all, the internet. And now we've got this whole theoretically AI thing. And you know what I mean? The humans are as messed up as we are. And anybody who's worked in a large corporation knows the inefficiencies that go on within these huge corporations, right? But somehow we always seem to become more productive over time. So those three things allow the stock market to go up over time. Doesn't mean sometimes it doesn't get a little bit crazy and then it comes off and all that. But if you're dollar cost averaging the whole way and not thinking, you know, then over time that should work. And it also, by the way, protects you, your wealth, right? Because if all these things are going up and you're sitting in cash, which is losing money over time because of inflation, right? Then you're losing relative to the people that are. I mean, wealth is all about relative, right? There's no number that makes you rich because it's relative to anybody else, right? I always say, like, if the government were to come out and give us all $1 million, right? It wouldn't make anybody richer, right? Because every single house the next day would be priced $1 million higher. So, like, it wouldn't make anybody richer. It's all a relative thing. So the good thing about that stock market thing, too, is you're essentially, you're with the growing economy. So as the economy grows, you're part of it. And so you're not losing your relative wealth in that particular case. So that's kind of what I believe. Now, if you really want to get into it, and you really, which most people don't, but you know, you're really supposed to put together, like I'm saying, a bunch of different return streams that don't have any correlation, right? And over time, that's what's going to make you more wealth, right? But it's very hard to find that, which is why I have a business, quite frankly, because I do offer that too. But you know, where do you get non-correlation? Okay, so you're long stock, you're long your business. Well, your business is going to do better when the economy gets better. You're long the stocks. The stocks are going to get better, you know, as the economy gets better. You're long some real estate. Well, the real estate's going to get better if the economy gets better. So it's all kind of correlated. So it's very difficult to find these non-correlated return streams. But in general, things tend to go up over time. So the people that I know that are worth the most money are the people that have never sold anything. You know, I have a very good friend that I grew up with who didn't really have very much money when we were growing up. His family didn't have very much money, but his father got involved in the parking lot business in the 70s in New York and Jersey City and all this. And in the 70s, New York and Jersey City were in the dumps, right? And he got involved in the parking lot business and found some partners, and they started buying some parking lots in the crappiest parts of the city, in Jersey City, which at the time was just a complete dump. I remember they bought an entire city block in downtown Jersey City for $80,000, which is now where the PATH train goes, and there's a Marriott hotel, and there's five huge, you know, apartment blocks that they built on it, right? And they have never sold. They bought all these parking lots. And in the last 25 years, they have turned those parking lots into residential towers that they rent out. They've never sold. And they could have sold out many times for lots and lots and lots of money, right? But they've never sold, and he's the richest guy that, at least that I know on a personal level, maybe not because I've known some hedge fund guys, but in general, it's the people that have never sold. You know, you have to not be too leveraged. You know, people get greedy, so they get too leveraged. So when things come down, all of a sudden they're forced out, right? So it's a function of not being too leveraged so you can hold through the down periods and just never selling. That's how you build wealth, I believe. That's what I have learned. I wish I knew it when I was in my 20s. I inherited some money when I was in my 20s. I call it like 50 grand or something like that from a great aunt that was all in stocks. And I was like 23 years old. And the first thing I did was sell it. I took that $50,000 and, you know, I partied, right? Because I thought the stock market was too high at the time. Well, the Dow Jones Industrial Average at that time was at 4,000, right? It's now at 35,000. You know, these are all lessons that, you know, I didn't know at 20. I thought I was smarter than the world. But over time, you learn that you're not. So.
And the themes I'm hearing as you talk are, one, very optimistic in terms of, you know, the things that you can bet on. And then also patience, but being in it for the long run.
Not too leveraged because you're not too greedy.
Yeah. No. Not too greedy. Yeah.
Otherwise you get shaken out.
So good advice there. And I've this theme has come up a couple of times in some other topics that are just kind of general principles. And
no, I think that these lessons go across everything, yeah. Not just trading or markets or business. They go across life. I mean, that's what I have found anyway.
Well, is there anything else that you think would be of value to my audience is in terms of the market, because it does seem to be a big topic lately. You're very optimistic about it. Sometimes I hear people not so optimistic, but like you said, it's relative to where it's been.
I mean, it's proven itself over time, and that doesn't mean that today isn't the top of the market for the next 50 years. Maybe it is, okay? But up until this point, you know, it has certainly proven itself over time. The one thing, and again, I could be right here. I could be topping what we have going on here, what many argue is a bubble at this particular time. And in the whole AI thing, as NVIDIA stocks up and all these stocks have just gone straight up and arguably could be considered a bubble. And I'm not here to say it's not. Maybe it is. I don't know, right? It's only in retrospect that we know. But in terms of business, what I have found, this is no genius thing, okay? But you got to figure out how to utilize the internet. It's the most unbelievable return on investment that anybody has ever seen, you know? To compare, you know, the return that these people are getting, Facebook and these people, it's never been done in the history of the world. You know, the margins of these people. Facebook runs a how many billion dollar business, and they're on like 60-65% margins. It's unbelievable. I don't know any business that's on 65 that can maintain 65% margin for many years. And it's because the investment relative to the audience, I think, is so big now, right? I mean, what's it cost to start a web page or whatever, you know, versus who can you hit up? You can hit up the whole world, right? You got 7 billion customers out there, right? We have on our little webpage that is for people that want to learn how to trade and all that, you know, and we haven't done any advertising. Now, granted, I was in this book, so a lot of people kind of knew my name, and that's why we started this thing, because people were coming to me asking me if I could help them and all that. So we started this, but I mean, we got people from like 60 different countries, man. I've never been to these countries. I've been to some of them, right? But I've never met any of these people. And that's without us even really advertising. You know, we don't spend any money on advertising or anything like that. I'll put something on Twitter. People will see it, they'll like it, and they'll find our webpage and they'll sign up. So, and I mean, we started this thing with, you know, a few $1,000s, right? So the return. And again, to make it sound like this is a smart thing to say is ridiculous because everybody knows this. But I just have to reiterate that the return on this stuff is just still to this day is just like nothing the world has ever seen, you know. So I was saying to some guy last night because he was asking me about this, and I was like, I'm never going to invest personally in a business that is not related to that, because you cannot find a better return on investment. Like, what are you going to do? You're going to get into a manufacturing business? I've owned a manufacturing business. You know, you got to get a factory, you got to get equipment, you got to do this, you got to hire people to build the stuff, and you know, you got to pay all that money for them to work, and you know, all the things that go with that. And your return on investment ends up being somewhere in the 8 to 10% range, right? If you're lucky, you know, if it's successful. The return on this stuff is in the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of percent. So to me, you're looking to start a business? I don't know. Call me crazy, but that's where you go. And I don't think anybody doesn't know this clearly, but I mean, look at what these people do on YouTube, and you know, these kids and all these different weird sites that are out there. These people are making millions of dollars, and it costs them nothing. What's it cost to turn on your... Now, look, you got to figure out how to get the audience, obviously, but you need that for any business that you have, right? You got to figure out where to get the customers, but they're out there by the billions. So if you have a good product, you'll figure out how to find them, I think.
Right. We'll talk a little bit about your crowded market report. And it sounds like you're very passionate about it and the community that you're in. Just kind of give us an overview of what you're doing. You said it's because people wanted to learn more about what you have done with your investments.
So because I was in that Market Wizards book, which is a pretty well-known and respected series of books about trading the markets, when it came out, I started getting a lot of people. I was never on Twitter or anything like this, but I was on LinkedIn. And I mean, every day I was getting 10 people sending me messages on LinkedIn. You know, hey, I read your chapter in the book and it really resonated with me. And, you know, is there any chance that you could teach me how to trade or hire me, or I'll come and make you coffee every day and just show me how to do what you're doing and all that stuff. And I wanted to, you know, you get to a point in life where you, and there's always been a history of this with trading. I was taught, you know, by people who didn't need to teach me, you know, the guy who I would consider my mentor didn't need to help me. You know, he was retired and he was a very rich guy and he was successful from trading. And I met him and then he mentored me. And you kind of want to pass that forward, right? So as these people were coming to me, I was like, you know, this would be a good time for me to do that. But I said to these people, like, listen, I can't sit here and mentor 200 people at a time. You know what I mean? I have a business, I have a family, you know, so I don't really know what to do here. I'd like to help you, but I don't really know what to do, was my answer at first. And one of those people said to me, well, if that's the case, why don't I start a web page and we could centralize this thing and you can do it that way. So I was like, yeah, that sounds good. Go ahead. You know, I never met this guy, you know what I mean? But there was no downside. Like I say, we put up, you know, a couple thousand dollars to start the thing. It doesn't cost very much, right? And he went off and he did this, and suddenly people started coming on there. And I didn't really have any plan for it or anything. I write up a weekly sort of trading plan for me, which I have done for over 20 years. On the weekends, like, here's my outline for how I'm going to approach the market this week. And it's more about keeping me disciplined than anything else, right? Here's my outline for what I want to do. So let's stick to the outline. And there was a time where I distributed that. I worked at a pretty large hedge fund at one point. I distributed that within that hedge fund. And I got some good feedback on it. At one point, I had a bunch of clients in my fund that were themselves hedge fund managers. And I was managing like some of their personal money. And they used to like to get that report too. So I figured that some people would like it. So we just started to distribute that on the weekends. And then he started a Discord page, which quite frankly, I didn't even know what a Discord page was, being the old fogey that I am. But we got on this Discord page and distributed this thing and just started talking. And it's become I have to say, I didn't really know how many people were going to come on or whatever, but we've gotten quite a few people on there and it's just become, it's become an incredible thing for the most part. You know, sometimes we get people on there that are jerks, and I just kick them off, because I don't really care. You know, we keep the fee very low. You know, the guy who started this thing deserves to earn some money off it. It's just like anything else. People are like, oh, well, if you're so great at trading, why do you charge your people to get on there? I'm like, I mean, quite frankly, the money that I was taking in was going to a charity, but the guy who runs the thing deserves to make money, because he keeps it really good, right? He has to stay on top of it, and he has to, so, and he does. And sometimes it gets a little unruly. There's a lot to do, right? So it's become a really cool thing, because it's taken on a life of its own, become this whole community of people. And I push the idea, you know, there's a lot of people out there that are pushing the idea of, oh, you know, join our thing and I'll teach you how to make $10,000 and turn it into $1 million in 3 months, right? And it's all a scam, obviously. But people get sucked into that. I don't, our whole thing is, come and hopefully I can help you to stop losing money. That's my sales pitch, right? Like, I want to teach you how to actually approach trading the market, right? You don't have to trade like me necessarily, right? I'll show you what I do, right? But as a way of sort of following how I do the discipline and how I do the risk management, because those are the important things. And I say that to people all the time, you have to trade you, but within trading you, these are the important, it's like we said before, these lessons apply to everything, right? It's the same thing with the trading lessons. They apply to any type of trading, right? And that's really what I'm trying to help people understand. And they are. And we've seen some, I have to say, some pretty amazing success stories. Some people, it takes time, especially the younger people, right? They'll come on and, you know, they're going to, just like I was, I was 24 years old. They're going to take over the world. They're going to be the best trader that ever lived. They don't need to listen to nobody. They don't, you know what I mean? Over time, the one thing about the market is that will crush you. So over time, it crushes them. And then they either run away or they say, okay, I'm ready to learn now. Right. And I think that we're helping people to do that. And that A feels really good. I get a lot of people sending me messages like, hey man, you turned my whole world around with this stuff. And I really, you know, that feels really good. At this age, you know, I say a lot like, okay, so I've made money trading by picking off essentially the weakest traders out there as I see it. Right. And that's fine. I don't apologize for that. I'm not forcing anybody to sell me things when I buy, and I'm not forcing anyone to buy things from me when I sell. All right. I trade right at the market price, right? It's fine. It's how I put food on the table for my children and all that. But when it comes to a bigger legacy type of thing, you know, it's nice. Again, as you get older, I never thought of this when I was 30 years old. All I cared about was how much money I could make, right? But as you get older and you've sort of put money away and all that, it becomes a legacy thing. You know, like, how, what have I done to at least help people, you know? And I'm not the type of person that's going to go out and, you know, serve whatever lunch to the homeless or whatever. And there are people that do that. It's just not my thing, right? But at least I can teach people what I've learned over 35 years, hopefully. And that helps them. And if that can help them to do this, then that kind of feels good as well. And what's become beautiful about the community too, is there's other people on there too. And they're talking about what they're learning and what they're doing and how they're approaching it. And therefore people can see, hey, this guy approaches the market differently than I do, but the lessons are the same, right? And that has slowly really been ingrained, and I've learned a hell of a lot from these people as well. So it's become a really cool thing. I never had any plans for what this thing was going to become. I didn't even know if it was going to work or last or whatever, but you know, we're going on like our fourth year, and it's been super cool, I have to say.
So do you have an example of like a success story that you're really, it sounds like you're proud of the community as a whole, but is there one particular story that somebody told you or it reached out and said, you've changed my life that
I get them all the time.
You do? But, okay. A lot.
I mean, the people put it on our testimonials, which is on our, I'm trying to move the camera so I could get to where people have said this.
And I've seen your testimonials on there too, but I didn't know if there's one that's very personal and very special to you.
I mean, they're all kind of special, quite frankly. We did a video. I do videos on YouTube every week that talk about these subjects too, which is what I was doing before we started this whole thing. My son got me into that. And we did one where we asked five people, and we tried to pick five people that were in different stages. Some have been with us for a few years. Some have just been with us for a couple months. Some do this type of trading. Some do that type of trading, you know. And we had them just do like a couple minute testimonial on what they thought about it. And that's kind of on YouTube. But I mean, the best one is really just to see the testimonials. We put them on the webpage anyway.
And I'm going to share in the show notes your website and stuff. So where people can, I know you've got Crowded Market Reports, where they can find you. And I'll include those links in the websites, and then other places on Twitter or LinkedIn that we can direct our listeners to.
LinkedIn, I don't do much, but we are on Twitter. I think it's like, let me look it up. I'm so bad with technology.
And I can ask Hazim to send me those links too.
Yeah, I'm not very good with technology. Okay. I'm not very good with marketing, but on Twitter, at crowded_MKT_RPT. That's where we are on Twitter. And I'll post one or two things on there every day that sort of is my observation of markets and my observation of psychology behind the markets. And I try to keep it kind of humorous so people like it. On YouTube, I do a video pretty much every week, which is also under Crowded Market Report. And clearly that stuff's all free, you know.
Are you on Instagram or Facebook?
No.
Okay.
I offed Facebook a few years ago. And I don't even know Instagram.
Okay.
and then, you know, obviously the webpage, crowdedmarketreport.com.
Okay, great. Then, like I said, we'll include that in our show notes. And so to wrap it up, do you have anything like final words that you want to say?
I mean, you know, I say it about trading because that's what I do. But I think that whatever business you're in, it's about, first of all, the whole idea of doing what you love, you know what I mean, is very, very important, right? We know that. And not everybody can do that. Not everybody knows what they love. You know, I understand all that. I have kids, you know what I mean? They are always at, you know, in the middle of that. But it makes it a lot easier to be good at it, clearly, right? But the lessons of discipline and risk management, you know, which means don't over lever, right? And time, right? Everybody, like in trading, and I think everything else, wants to make $1 million today. And that's just not realistic, right? Because you can make $1 million today, but there's a good chance that you're going to lose it tomorrow, right? If you're just gambling, right? I mean, you want to make $1 million, you know, you go to the casino, right? And yeah, you can win, but chances are over time you're going to lose. So it's a question of time. And in order to buy time, you have to not over lever, you know, whether that's in trading or whether that's in anything. I think you need to be able to have time. I like to say a lot with the trading, you have to be alive long enough to get lucky. You know, I had a friend whose father had this business, and they had like this air purification system, right? And he thought it was great technology and he bought it. And it wasn't doing that well. You know, they were kind of staying alive. They were kind of keeping their head above water. And, you know, he had to go and raise some money a couple times to keep it alive. And he kept it alive, right? They weren't getting rich or anything, but he kept it alive. And then, you know what? COVID hit. And they sold millions of dollars of air purification systems, right? So, again, he stayed alive long enough to get lucky. And I think that's really the key to just about everything, right? Stay alive long enough. Maybe you'll get lucky this year. Maybe you'll get lucky in 3 years. Maybe it takes 5 years. Maybe it takes 10 years. But if you're onto something that's good, right, it will work as long as you are patient and you keep doing, being disciplined every day and doing the right thing, you know, every day. I say it to my kids all the time. Wake up every morning and go through what you have to go through every single day. And in time, that is going to work.
Wise words, Jason. And thank you so much for joining me today. I do appreciate your time because I know it's valuable. And I appreciate your insights too.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you to our listeners for tuning in to another episode of Busy Research. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe. We'll catch you in the next episode of Busy Research. Until then, stay curious and busy.